Welcome to the show. I'm Elizabeth Barrett, and this is A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist. I'm so glad that you're able to tune in today for this great conversation with Jackie Venson. I met her backstage at Live Oak Music Festival. And one of the things about these conversations is that usually the manager or the agent has a time limit for the conversation, for the interviews, and then the artist or authors or musicians, whoever I'm speaking to, usually has a curated set of questions and things that they want to talk about or that their agent has, you know, cleared for them to talk about. And so oftentimes it makes those conversations end up feeling a bit stale, not too interesting, you know, this kind of formulaic, you're expecting the answers. And so it's really fun when you get to talk to someone who doesn't have the curated questions, and there is a time set for the interview, but not really a length. And so you get to just dive into the conversation and see where it takes you. And that was my conversation with Jackie Venson. She's a singer-songwriter born and raised in Austin, Texas, but she took some time out to go to Berklee College of Music. She's a guitar virtuoso. She actually went into Berklee playing the piano, and after her musical education, found her way to the guitar where she really started to shine. She's released 5 studio albums to date, and her write-ups from different publications are staggering. For example, Forbes magazine has said, Jackie Venson is truly an Austin legend in the making. And according to Premier Guitar, Jackie Venson fuses electric Hendrix meets Prince blues guitar. She is on fire. And man, her stage performance, her live performance is just dynamic. It feels like there is a giant band backing her up, but her ability to utilize modern tools along with her band gives it this really full, rich sound. So you're welcome to be part of the conversation after our show today by sending me an email to elizabeth@thereluctanttherapist.com. You can also find me on Instagram or Facebook, or look for previous shows at kcbx.org. Or as always, you can podcast our show, and you can find us wherever it is you do your podcasting, through Spotify or NPR Podcasts, Apple Podcasts. Just search for A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist, hit subscribe, and we're there. I think we're also on YouTube, but just the audio part. So we should be really easy to find and also really easy to share. And I think for a conversation with someone like Jackie, it would be great to share her sound because she's on fire. So for those of you who aren't familiar with Jackie Venson, we're going to take a moment to hear some of her music. We're going to start off with See What I Want to See right here on Central Coast Public Radio, KCBX.
My daddy told me so. He said, now you're alive, girl. The blues are in your soul. I don't understand. I said, I don't know what you mean. Says that's because I see what I wanna see. I lost my favorite toy. I fell from a tree.
Another one of our backstage conversations here at Live Oak Music Festival. And today I'm with Jackie Venson, who is a singer-songwriter, been named the Guitarist of the Future by Rolling Stone, and just came off the stage here at Live Oak. And two things I noticed. One, people lined up and wanted to be able to talk to you. Something about your music made people feel like they needed to have a conversation with you.
Yeah.
Does that happen often?
Yes, every show. It's every single show.
It's so fun to see that.
Show and then hour meet and greet every time.
Yeah, it's so fun. There's something so personal about it. I want to start just with the experience of tonight and then kind of backtrack from there.
Okay.
What is it about you on stage? Do you feel you're inviting people to want to connect with you? I mean, it was pretty remarkable, the response after the show.
Well, I always wanted to be a songwriter.
Mm-hmm.
I've always like been amazed that people can write a song and then that song can reach so many people and make people feel things simultaneously. I've always thought that was just like really cool.
Mm-hmm.
And started writing when I was like 15, and I didn't like any of my songs until I picked up the guitar, you know, I guess 6 years later.
Were you writing the songs to? Were you using the piano then?
I was
originally
using the piano, and they were dreary. The lyrics were corny. They were ballad.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes the music was corny. It sounded like Jerry Lee Lewis. Jerry Lee Lewis was not corny.
No.
Like, you know, 80 years ago when he hit the
scene.
But
was it kind of a rockabilly sound too?
Whenever I would want it to write an upbeat song, it would either sound like Broadway, but like old Broadway, not like cool, innovative Broadway, like old, like 70-year-old Broadway.
King and I.
Yeah, or it would sound like Jerry Lee Lewis. And like, all of those sounds are iconic, but they have been done. And they've been done decades, almost a century ago, some of them, you know? So I didn't like it. And the whole problem the entire time was that I didn't have any experience.
Mm-hmm.
And in order to know that, you have to like get experience. It's like a weird cart before.
But when you're
16,
you already feel like you have the experience, don't you? Like there's a confidence of being young.
It's more like I feel like I have the skill, and I don't realize how much experience comes into play.
Mm.
Like I like could play all these songs on the piano. I could make up good melodies.
Mm-hmm.
I couldn't figure out how to make it connect.
Mm-hmm.
And then I went to college, and college was really eye-opening. Because I was out of town. It was the first time I'd ever left Texas.
Like, did you grow up in Austin?
I did, and I traveled a lot, but it's the first time I had ever like lived somewhere else,
mm-hmm.
like ever. And I left state.
Mm-hmm.
Like I grew up in the same house for 18 years. Like when I moved out of my house.
Not a lot of people do that.
No. My world was permanent.
Mm-hmm.
Everything was there, and it was permanent, and it wasn't going anywhere. And that's what it was like for God, even the first 27 years of my life.
Really?
Yeah, even when my mom moved into a different house, she's still in that house, right? And my parents were around, and my dad's passed away since, but...
I'm sorry.
Yeah, he was old. I'm the youngest of 9. He was 80. He
lived
He lived a complete life.
Did he get to see you perform?
Oh, yeah, all the time.
Okay.
We performed together.
Oh.
He's a musician. Tonight, on stage, when I get on stage, I'm just trying to get the songs out there, and then I just get lost in the song in the process of doing that. I go up there with the mindset of, I want to play these songs really well, and I want people to hear them, and I want them to hear the lyrics, and if they can relate to the lyrics, I want them to feel something.
Mm-hmm.
And then I'll go talk to them
and we'll about what they felt.
Yeah, and we'll get a picture together, and then in 10 years they've gone to 8 shows, and we just have all these pictures together that are just slowly. We're just graying together in these pictures, like, or I met you when you were 6 and now you're, you know, 14 and, you know, like that kind of stuff, just like living together, not having to do this alone.
Yeah. I love that. There is a piece of living together, isn't there? When you get to play. So I heard people come and say, I saw you at Whale Rock.
Yeah. Yeah. Whale Rock. There's a lot of people here from Whale Rock. And so that goes to show you how good a festival like this can be for, you know, building a fan base.
Yeah.
People see you and they stick with you.
Yeah.
You know?
And then they see your name pop up and they're traveling to wherever you are.
Yeah. Or they see your name pop up on the bill and now they want to buy tickets. And maybe they didn't want to buy tickets before. It's the entire reason why the festival hires us.
Yeah.
You know, like.
Hopefully bring some people.
Yeah, exactly. Like this person brings this many people. This person brings that many people. This person was personally requested by like 200 of our season pass holders.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like that kind of thing.
That's a great feeling. All right. I'm going to back you up then.
Okay.
So for someone who doesn't know your music, because clearly what we saw on stage, was a lot of people came to see you. Mm-hmm. But for someone who hasn't been introduced to you, let's talk a little bit about how you found your way here, because I mentioned that you'd gone to Berklee for music, and I overheard you saying that you started playing the piano when you were 4 or 5. Is that what I heard you tell someone?
6, but not like serious, like regular lessons until 8. Like I kind of meandered around on it, and my mom just kept on being like, God, I gotta find her teacher.
I need to get this
for 2 years. Like, God, I gotta find her teacher. But I would probably play it several times a week.
And you're the youngest of how many?
9.
Yeah. So your mom must have been a little tired by the time you came around too.
Well, my mom and my dad met when like my mom was 20, late 20s, and my dad was late 30s. So my dad already had a few kids. They came with my dad.
Oh, so you got a whole package deal. That's nice.
Yeah, I was the last of, like, my mom had 3 kids. And then my dad came with the rest of the kids.
There you go. So your mom still had a little energy for you by the time you rolled around.
My mom is, I don't know how she did anything that she did. I could never fill her shoes. Ever. I could never. I am doing the maximum of what I can do right now. I'm doing the max. And she did more, and she had children, including children that weren't hers. And she like didn't die of exhaustion. I don't know how, like, I don't know
she
how
didn't
she
expire
did it.
Along the way.
I've literally chosen not to have kids. I've chosen to be childless because I know that I can't handle it, because I know that this is all I can handle.
This is your life.
I am maxed out, and this is 30% of what my mom did at the same age.
So what, tell me about your mom then.
Well, she's a doctor. She started she was one of the 6 founding doctors of a clinic in Austin called Austin Regional Clinic. It's a really big deal clinic in Austin. Been around since 1981.
Wow.
And that's when she moved to Austin with my dad. She chose Austin over Sacramento because she liked that the medical group was like independent and not just like a part of like Kaiser Permanente. It was either Kaiser Permanente in Sacramento or like this cool like
startup
yeah. Like and the guy starting it up's name's Norman. He's just real brilliant person. His vision, she just really believed in it. And Austin's a great music town, and my dad was a musician.
Oh, well, that worked out for both.
Yes, that's why she just like was like, Austin's the place. Like, it's good for me and, you know, my dad. So, good for her and my dad. So, like, yeah, she moved there, and they started that clinic, and she was the chief of the OB of the gynecology and obstetrics department. Yeah.
Wow.
And she also worked anywhere from 90 to 120-hour weeks. She only works part-time now.
And how many hours is that?
50 hours. Yeah. She still works 50 hours
wow.
a week.
How do you fit that in?
She's 73.
Wow.
She's selling my merch right now and working 50-hour weeks. I'm so for real, dude.
Yeah.
Like,
does she sleep, or is she just magically...
She's really good at time management, man. She, like, gets her sleep. She walks with her friends and exercises 3 times a week. She works 50 hours at this place, takes care of, like, 60 patients. Her record for patients in a day has never been beaten. Not even by the young doctors. Her record was like something like 59 patients in a day, and that was just what she did.
Wow.
She just did that. And then she'd come home and be like, hey, baby, you need help with your homework? Like, what are you on, Mom?
I know.
What are you on? I will
never. And did she make dinner too?
No, that's what my dad did. So my dad took care of the house.
Okay.
He worked on the weekends, a musician.
Yep.
So he took care of the house. He would have rehearsals during the week, so I would get to hear his band. Rodney was in
the
band.
Right at the house?
Yeah, right at the house.
Oh, how fun.
Rodney was in his band.
And is Rodney in your band?
Rodney's my drummer.
Oh, that's
Rodney
so
was
great.
In his band. He was in his band for 25 years before my dad retired. But like, because like, you got to understand, my dad is 46 years older than me. He was 46 when I was born. So people were like, I'm sorry you lost your dad. I'm like, he's 46 years old. He was 80.
He had a great career before you even showed up.
And then he reached the natural conclusion of his life. Like, it was hard to lose him because he's such a big personality, but... He lived a complete life.
Yeah.
He really did.
And he got to perform with you then, I imagine, too.
Yeah, and he gigged all the way. Like, his last gig was like a week and a half before he passed away.
Really?
He was still booking gigs, man.
That's the way to go.
What I'm saying is, like, I will never fill my mom's shoes, and I'm not even going to try.
which is probably a healthy way to approach it. Otherwise, you just spend your life spinning.
Yes, I'm just not even going to try.
Okay, but you're no slouch, because going to Berkeley School, is it Berklee School of Music, or how it's the
Berklee
official
College of Music.
College of Music, thank you. You have to audition in. That's a very elite place to get to go study. Tell me about that. How did you know about it? How did you decide to even audition and give it a shot?
Well, when I was like 15, I told my mom, when I graduate, I guess I'll just start gigging. I'll mm-hmm. just maybe join dad's band and see what's what. You know, be the keyboard player of dad's band. Or maybe like start, you know, just gigging. I was already looking on Craigslist. Mm-hmm. Found out about Craigslist and I found out there was a gig section. There's a gig section on Craigslist. And I was like, and mom was like, no, you need to go to college. And I'm like, mom, I'm literally like a savant on the piano. Like, what the hell are you talking about? You want me to go to UT? She's like, no. She's like, no, Jacqueline, there's music colleges. Like, you can go to a college that will hone the skills that you, there's a music college there. And I'm like, what do you mean? She's like, the whole college, music. Mm-hmm. There's music colleges. Like, one is called Juilliard. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, oh yeah, I've heard of Juilliard. She's like, you can go to an arts college, but no matter what, you need a secondary education. Like, that's non-negotiable.
Your mom is focused.
No, it's just non-negotiable. She's mm-hmm. like, you will not be set up the same way for the rest of your life if you don't. Mm-hmm. And she's not saying that people who don't get a secondary education are screwed or anything. She's just saying that they just have a little bit harder of a time. There's resources mm-hmm. that you get from secondary education that you just don't get otherwise. And obviously, depending on the school, but Berklee happened to be a really good school if you cared about finding the right teachers.
Oh, interesting.
Berklee is two schools. It's like there's Berklee Jekyll and there's Berklee Hyde. You know what I mean?
No.
And like, if you don't insist on, like, if you, like, I didn't like one of my teachers and I went to the career development department and I kind of basically refused to leave until they switched me to a different teacher.
Really?
Yes, because that course is $8,000 and I'm not going to spend that money on a teacher that shows up 10 minutes late every single time and then barely teaches us anything. And also they put me in a course, Harmony One, which is basically music theory.
Mm-hmm.
And we go in day one, they're like, okay, so the key signature for A flat. And I'm like, what? I'm like, I auditioned and played Rachmaninoff's Prelude in G minor. And y'all put me in a class where we're learning key signatures. I am paying $8,000 to learn something that I learned when I was 8 years old.
But you'd also think that a school like Berklee would assume that everyone was elevated by the time they got there.
Not exactly. So
okay.
Drummers don't know how to read music. Why? Why would they need to know mm-hmm. the grand staff? Like, let's say you get into Berklee and you're a drummer.
Right.
And you don't know how to read music. Berklee will teach
so
it
to
you.
So they are starting at that.
What I'm trying to tell you is they need... Did you not see that I played Chopin Prelude? Did you not see that I played Rachmaninoff Prelude in G minor? And you're putting me in a class where we're learning how to read a grand staff? I'm trying to tell you that the organization, it's not organized. Mm-hmm. They need to have a spreadsheet. Mm-hmm. The accomplished classical pianist should probably be put in Harmony 3.
You would think.
How about that?
You would think.
The vocalist who sang in church, who's absolutely phenomenal, but they sang in church and it was all by ear, maybe they need to take Harmony 1, and there's nothing wrong with that. I'm just saying, I am paying $60,000 a year, and you guys can't get an Excel spreadsheet going. So I'm in the career development freaking office every 2 weeks for my entire
yeah.
career there. I'm serious. I was there all the time.
Is it a four-year program?
It is a four-year program, and I wanted to graduate early because I really didn't like it there. I didn't like the vibes. I liked what I was learning, but, you know, you hit a dud class, and now I got to go to the department again and fight for my money.
Mm-hmm.
I'm like, I'm not asking for my money back. I'm asking you to put me in another class that costs the same that is suitable for what I already know. I can't believe I have to say this out loud. Wow.
So you had to fight for your education.
I did, and I went to Berklee Hyde. But you know what? A lot of people went to Berklee Jekyll, and a lot of people... blew and burned away tens of thousands of dollars at Berklee Jekyll.
Didn't John Mayer go for a while?
For one semester.
And said, I don't need this.
He went for one semester and he dropped out. Mm-hmm. The dropout rate is something like 66%.
So did he have the Berklee Jekyll experience?
No, he just decided he was just going to move to Atlanta and just make it or something like that. I think that's what I read.
Okay.
He was just like, eh. And I'm going to stop spending, oh, I don't know, 30 grand every 4 months. And I'm just going to go start gigging. Like, I respect what he did.
Yeah.
Most people don't graduate. They don't understand, like, how it's going to be useful to be in all that debt. And that's valid.
So what did you do?
Were you gigging all the way through school or did you, no?
I was just doing homework.
So when you finished, what was your coming out party for the world?
I went home.
Back to Austin.
Yep. I told them to, they were like, be at the graduation ceremony at 6 a.m. on Saturday. And I'm like, sorry, my flight's on Thursday. Mail me my diploma. Here's my address. Bye.
That was it.
And while everybody was walking the stage, I was flying back to Austin, to start figuring it out there. I knew I wanted to gig. Mm-hmm. I'd already picked up the guitar.
Mm-hmm. While you're in Berkeley.
While I was at Berkeley, okay. I had my mom look for a guitar teacher for me. She's really good at finding guitar teachers.
And clearly piano teachers.
Yes, yeah, she's really good at finding education for me. She's really good at it. She has a network and she just asks people. And I'm like, Mom, when I get home, I'm going to buy a guitar and I want to start taking guitar lessons like within a month or two of being home. And so she found me a teacher and I just started doing that. At first, I had to play gigs, like, just to make money. I had to, like, host karaoke.
No way.
Host an open mic. You know, radio hustle is actually very similar. I'm serious. Like, you're doing this kind of radio show, that kind of radio show. Mm-hmm. You're doing these type of events. You know, mm-hmm. it's a real, like, the cutting your teeth phase is really similar.
Mm-hmm. And so what was the first... Now, you're still writing songs throughout all of this as well, correct?
I just... It took me about 2 years to be able to write songs on the guitar. I couldn't play it. I couldn't play it for more than 30 minutes without my hands literally failing, like muscle failure.
Yes. And the can't think of the word now. My brain didn't work. Building up the
calluses.
Thank you. I don't know why that didn't come to me.
No worries.
So you kind of, I'm just trying to stay on your story here.
Yeah, no worries.
We had piano. High school songs were not cutting it.
Didn't like it.
So you pushed those aside, went and found guitar, came back. Are you someone who's writing poetry in your diary and making songs, or are you writing music and the lyrics are like, what's your,
the lyrics?
How'd you find your way with the guitar? Why was that different?
It was different because I knew it was going to be different because the way that you have to play the guitar mm-hmm. is different than the way that you have to play the piano. So if the source of the sound is different, then naturally the sound itself will be different.
Okay.
And maybe that was like at the end of college, I knew I had to get a job. I knew I wanted to perform still. I knew I did not want it to be on the piano.
Okay.
And I just like, was like, whenever I get into that place where I feel stuck, I always like to just like do something really drastic.
Okay.
And I was like, you know what? I'm just going to pick up a new instrument. And that was 3 months before I graduated from Berkeley. So Berkeley gets absolutely zero credit. I want that to be clear.
Make sure we know.
I want that to be clear. That Berkeley had almost nothing to do with my guitar education. The only thing I can credit is that one of my friends there played guitar and he gave me a big download folder of guitar players I needed to listen to. That's all I can. I just happened to be around guitar players who were like, oh, you want to learn how to play guitar? You need buddy guys. Yeah, like exactly. Like that's the only thing I can say about Berkeley and my guitar there. Otherwise, Austin. Austin, Texas is where I learned how to play the guitar.
Okay, so where in Austin? Where do you start finding yourself?
So I was doing karaoke, hosting karaoke, and I was walking dogs and I was babysitting.
Okay.
So that's how I was making money, making my rent. My rent was only $675 a month at that time.
That's crazy.
For a two-bedroom two-bedroom apartment with washer dryer in unit. $675.
I don't think that's happening anymore.
That's not possible. It's literally not possible anymore. Mm-hmm. But it's not even possible in a place where nobody wants to live. Like it's not even possible in like anywhere. So anyway, So then, finally, after 2 years of private lessons and going to open jams, finally, I can play for more than about an hour. You know, my hands aren't failing and I can play. Mm-hmm. And I can play a little bit also without looking at the neck. And that's when I discovered looper pedals. The looper pedals is what's really launched my guitar songwriting. Being able to loop a pattern mm-hmm. and then just like veg out on it.
Mm-hmm.
Play notes, make sounds. Maybe plug in my keyboard and add a string part.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
You know what I mean? Like being able to repeat back. And then that would loop into the shows, right? So now I figured out looping. Before I was just playing songs. Now I'm doing little solos. Now I'm learning how to loop while I'm singing so that by the time I want to play the solo, the loop's already made. And then it just keeps on like being a building block on top of everything. And all of it is kind of centered around the technical education I got at Berkeley.
That's what I was going to say. That doesn't seem Berkeley, like someone Berkeley who's Hyde. Self-taught yeah, Berkeley gets Hyde. To do. Yeah.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
Somebody who, like, didn't get taught how to use every single music program ever.
Yeah.
Like Pro Tools, Logic, Digital Performer, Reaper, yeah. Ableton. Like, every single music project you can imagine, I spent 3 years learning how to do at Berkeley.
Yeah.
Because I was able to go to the Career Development Department, tell them that I'm too advanced for this class, take a test to get out of it, and by the time I'm in my second semester, I'm already into my major while everybody else is still doing prerequisites.
Yeah.
So I'm already, like, at the computer learning how to do Logic second semester.
So it must have interested you. Like,
it was really interesting. I did 10 hours of homework every day. I took it very seriously. I had a 3.9 GPA at the end of it.
That's great.
I was on the dean's list every year. It was awesome. The stuff we would learn was amazing, but I had to fight for it, man. Berkeley yeah. Jekyll was the default. Berkeley is Berkeley Jekyll.
Mm. But I have to say, though, that because you talked about your mom and how amazing your mom is and starting this clinic and doing all this.
She's really strong. Yeah.
You're tenacious.
She is.
You got
too.
That from your mom.
Like, for sure.
Because I don't think most young people would go to college and be that tenacious for their education. They'd probably be much more passive.
Well, here's the thing. Like, them being more passive is completely valid. I'm a millennial. We mm-hmm. were taught that if you follow the rules and mm-hmm. you go get the education, that the adults know what they're doing and that the systems will work.
Yes, and you'll be a success.
Yes, and I, ever since high school, ever since you had to get a bathroom pass to go to the bathroom, I'm like, so what if I was emergency right now and you're going to send me to... It, like, ever since high school was so much more rigid than middle school and elementary school.
Mm.
Those were fine. The teachers understood. If you had an emotional upset, they would care about you. High school, they're treating you like you're in prison. And that was the first time I was like, oh my God, I don't think the adults know what they're doing. Oh my God.
They're just trying to control us.
No, like, some of them do, but, like, a lot of them don't. And you don't know which ones don't until you know. And sometimes... It was like the first disillusionment because mm-hmm. I grew up in the same house mm-hmm. with the same parents and the same brothers and sisters. And I was like, and the teachers, elementary school was so good. Middle school was so good. And then high school is when I started to be like, and then college blew it wide open until I was able to switch it to Berkeley Hyde.
Yes. And again, being tenacious, yes. You made it work for you.
Because I don't want that to be my reality.
Yeah.
You have to force the reality that you want, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Otherwise, people will just walk all over you and just take your money.
So how does that show up in your music? Because
the robot
have a lot to say out there.
The robot. The sampler the sampler that I work with.
Okay. Oh, okay.
It's that gear that makes it sound like there's six people on stage, even yes. though there's only three.
And it's funny because during their set, I turned to my husband and I go, is she
where
by
is everybody?
Right there?
Yeah, yes. Where is everybody?
And he walked around to the other side of the stage and came back and said, no, just...
There's two other people.
Wild.
Yeah.
That's such a full sound you get.
Yes, and it's the sampler that the technical side of it I learned at Berkeley.
Mm-hmm.
Berkeley Hyde.
Thank you, Berkeley.
And, yes. And I took that. Okay, so basically what happened is I had this awesome band, legendary band, in 2018. Took me a while to find the players, but finally found them. And I had, like, gone through players before that. It just... Mm-hmm. You never know you're going to have the right chemistry until you start playing with somebody and then you don't. Then you got to tell them that you don't want to play with them anymore. And it's like...
It's kind of like dating.
Yeah, I had gone through this for about 5 years before I found this band in 2018.
Wow.
And this band was so good. If you want to hear them, they're on Jackie Vinson Live in Texas.
Okay.
Live in Texas. It's a video filmed at Green Hall, 2018. And they were so good. And by 2019... The bass player got hired away on Kanye's team.
Oh.
And the keyboard player got hired away on Gary Clark Jr.'s team.
Oh. They poached your team?
They poached my band. Literally, my band was so good that celebrities stole it. And so this is after a combined 6 years of just being like, wow. Where do I go? Who do I find? Where do I go? And I finally was like, well, I guess it's time to find another band. But then I was like, wait, stop. What's going to stop your next band from getting poached?
Right. Especially if they're great.
And they will be great. I will not do a gigs with, like, this band that I just had. Mm-hmm. This is the bar now, right?
Mm-hmm.
I'm not, it's either I have a band of this quality or I don't play. That's it. I was like, I don't want this to keep happening to me. Just getting another band is not mathematically the solution. The solution is not being phased when your players have to go do other things with their life.
Right.
That's the solution.
So being able to work with them and give them the time to do other things. And
they have lives. Yeah. They're humans. I'm not going to tell that bass player not to go work with Kanye West. You know, I don't think he's kind of crazy right now, but in 2018, he was at the top of his game and he was only kind of crazy and people still loved him. And that was a great opportunity in 2018. So like, I'm not going to tell the keyboard player not to go work with Gary Clark Jr. Like, I was on a world tour at the time. So like, the solution is to be able to operate with as many players as circumstantially can make the gig. Mm-hmm. And then when the players can't make the gig, it's modular. Now we do this show. Now we do that show. Oh, the keyboard player can't make it. Now we do the trio bass show. Now we do the duo show. And I'm like, can't do it with looper pedals. How am I going to do this? And so then I'm going into the studio, right? And I have this producer, same producer, his name's Eddie. And I'm talking to him about these little questions. I'm like, my next band's just going to get poached. Like, what am I going to do? Looper pedals can't cut it. I want to just be able to take it to the bridge. Like, 1, 2, 3, bridge, bam. Like, I just want to be able to just play songs and not have to build them. And he looks at me, he's like, girl, sounds like you need an MPC. I was like,
which is?
I was like, what the hell is an MPC, man? He's like, it's a sampler. And I'm like, a sampler? He's like, yeah, yeah. Oh my God. You don't know what an MPC is? He's like, rappers used to show up in the 80s with a microphone mm-hmm. and an MPC, and that was the entire show. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, okay, I'll look into it. So then I go home and I Google samplers, and I'm like, oh my God. I don't know how this is the solution right now, but I know that it's the solution. And then I found that sampler and played my first big shows with it in early 2019.
Wow. That was a big turnaround.
Well,
and then
yeah,
COVID came.
Yeah, it was September 2018 that I was having these revelations and talking to Eddie about it. So yeah, it was I move fast.
You do move fast.
I move fast, yeah.
When you discover something, again, the tenacity of your mother.
Why waste time?
Comes through you.
Yeah, like why waste time? Why put it off?
And are you writing music? So you're ready to start putting stuff out there as you're trying to figure out how to get the band sound?
Yes, yeah, so what
it's
I'm
all
doing,
happening at the same time.
And yeah, when is Rolling with the sampler.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's wild.
And when's Rolling Stone naming you the guitarist of the year?
2024.
Oh, that's recent. That's fabulous. Okay. Relatively so recent, how did you go through COVID then? Thank God for
live
the sampler.
Streaming. Live streaming solo with the sampler.
Yeah.
The sampler doesn't just play the parts. I can also record the parts in real time onto the sampler and populate like a track of the sampler with it. So like,
wow.
I can write songs with it.
Yeah.
I can like put a chord part and then I can plug a keyboard into it and do like a synth bass part. And then I can plug and I can get like a beat loop. I like to purchase beat loops from humans. I make sure that it's not AI.
Make them. Mm-hmm.
I make sure there are people who make beat packs and you pay like $30 or $40 for the person and the person gets paid for this beat pack that they made. And they might be a drummer and they go in and they record them playing beats that they made up. And then you go and you buy it. Because I'm not a drummer. Mm-hmm. I don't have very good drum ideas on my own. I'm not a drummer. So I'll pay a creator for a beat pack. And then I'll load that beat. It's just a loop, perfectly timed loop. And I'll put it into the sampler. And then I'll start playing rhythms over this beat pack. So that's what I did all of COVID. And then I would live stream me playing with this sampler. And it sounded really good because it's all coming out of the same speaker.
Yeah.
Real simple for broadcast audio.
Why weren't more musicians doing that? Why aren't more musicians doing this?
I suppose they're not tenacious enough. Because I also had to kind of teach myself this method. It's a DJ sampler.
Okay.
And it really is designed for DJs. So I have to do a lot of weird MacGyver stuff.
It's a good thing you hosted karaoke. It's kind of in line with that.
Yes, kind of. And mm-hmm. I also call it sampler math.
Okay.
Like if I want these background vocals to sound midway through the verse, I have to trigger them somewhere else. Because it's a DJ sampler that can only do 4 bars. So like, it's just repeating 4 bars. So in order to make the songs like evolve over 16 bars, I have to do like this math equation where I'm like, I'm going to trigger it on pattern 3 and then I'm going to let it run over pattern 4. And then it's like, it's the kind
of
stuff.
That's complex.
Very. And it's the kind of stuff that I learned at Berkeley. So that's what I'm saying. Like, it's hard to imagine how someone would arrive to these conclusions without like the exact steps taken over the course of my entire life.
But also you were classically trained to play the piano.
Yeah, so I'm doing all the arrangements. Cello parts and the string parts. I'm doing synth bass. I can play string bass now because I can play the guitar. My dad was a bass player. Every single element. It's like people tell me, they're like, hey, you should teach classes. I'm like, I don't know how to teach every single element that happened to me completely out of my control in a certain timeline. Like, I don't know.
It's all built on each other.
Yes. Yeah. And like combined with the tenacity.
Yeah.
So like, I don't know what to tell other people. It's an individual journey of mine that I've been on that
makes you unique.
And it makes it hard to recreate.
Yeah.
You know, like, if any piece of this puzzle was missing, I wouldn't be the same, you know?
Yeah. If you're just tuning in, my guest today is Jackie Venson, singer-songwriter, guitar aficionado, master pianist, and graduate of Berklee Hyde College of Music.
Berklee Hyde.
And this is a conversation with the Reluctant Therapist. I'm Elizabeth Barrett. We're here on Central Coast Public Radio, KCBX. So let's talk about the music itself and what you're trying to say, because part of your bio talks about you being an activist. And
yeah.
Well, you're not just writing love songs, but you're trying to change minds.
Well, I said earlier that you have to make the reality that you want to live in. You can't let the reality make you. Mm-hmm. Like the way I grew up, you know, we were taught, we had standards. We were multicultural. We were fascinated and respectful of other cultures. We loved other cultures and we embraced it.
Mm-hmm.
I remember people talking about America being a melting pot and that mm-hmm. being its greatest strength.
Mm-hmm.
This is all like stuff that was said all the time. And then 9/11 happened.
Mm-hmm.
And then this horrible, horrible racism wound just opened back up.
Mm-hmm.
It's just been an open scab ever since. And we just keep picking at it and not letting it heal.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
we're making it bigger
or making it bigger. And we keep picking at it and making it bigger and not addressing it. And it's like this ugly, ugly historical monster that's just reared its ugly head. And so many people directly related to me fought so hard for this to not happen. And I don't want to fail them.
Well, and for your parents, they couldn't have been married.
Yeah. Until
1968.
Yep. And they met in like the mid 70s.
Yeah.
You know,
so people fought hard even for your family to exist.
Exactly. And I saw the world that that prized diversity and celebrated what makes America one of the most unique countries that's ever existed in human history.
Mm-hmm.
The great experiment, truly the great experiment. I can't just like sit idly by and like, no, like, no.
So what songs do you point to that kind of speak to that for you? Which of your songs?
Probably like a lot of them are on my record, Love Transcends. I have a song called Fall of the USA. It's exactly what it sounds like it's about. And I have another song called Cover My Eyes. And that's also exactly what it sounds like it's about. You know, people not wanting to bury their head in the sand and just think that this will pass. And it's not just going to pass. We have to pass it. It's like a kidney stone. You know what I mean?
painful,
stuck, but it's got to go.
Much smaller than you think it feels.
Way smaller than you think it feels. But no matter what, it's got to go.
Yeah.
They can't stay there. It's got to go. So we got to pass this weird cultural dark ages. We got to pass it like a kidney stone.
I have two thoughts about it too, because you said 9/11, which is interesting because I guess...
Turning point.
Because I have felt that we've been paying penance for electing Barack Obama back to back, and that the people who could not accept that have been punishing the country since then.
Yeah, but I think that they only have had... I agree. And I think that the only reason why they've had the power to punish us is because of 9/11.
Interesting.
They were able to drum up enough... First of all, the Democrats failed to care about the rural areas for decades, let them go to ruin. That's
the
first
part. And
made it
ripe for takeover of the Republicans, yeah.
That's the first part of it.
Mm-hmm.
Then the Republicans got racist immediately because 9/11 is the perfect opportunity to push that agenda because that was horrific. It was absolutely horrific what happened at 9/11. But, you know, it was only one side of the story. You know, Middle East, our 9/11 is there 24/7. You know what I mean? That mm-hmm. happens to them every day. What mm-hmm. happened to us on 9/11 happens to them every day. Some country in the Middle East, every day. Mm-hmm. Multiple sometimes. But we didn't know that at the time, you know?
Yeah.
And then the rural areas, they are all getting preached to by basically false prophet. And here we are. It was like this perfect storm. And yes, we have been paying for Obama, but the only reason why they have the power to do that is because they have the support, and it's because of all the stuff that came before. It's honestly, like, kind of, like, an amazing story. Like, it's really disconcerting, and it's horrific.
Yes.
And it's tragic, and it's traumatic. But if we were 100 years from now, and we did not live this, and we heard this story...
Mm-hmm.
It's a pretty crazy, incredible story. And we're just happened to be in the middle of it.
Yes. And I keep trying to tell my students every end of the year, you're living through the most fabulous time to be young because you get to rewrite the history of the world.
Yeah.
People my age are time past, but the story going forward is yours to write. But I think there has to be the patience that it, you know, how long was the civil rights, but how long was the suffragist movement? It went from 1848 to 1920.
Yeah.
How long was the civil rights movement?
Decades. And so started where, in like the 40s or 30s, yes. 30s maybe.
So where we are today is just midstream of that revolution, but you'll be young enough to see it through.
Yeah. Like, that's what I'm saying. Like, may you live in interesting times. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm,
like,
mm-hmm.
It's... Because all I do is I just reconnect myself to all the things that happened to my ancestors.
Mm, mm.
And like, in a lot of ways, a lot of the things that happened to them were impossibly difficult. Mm. Unending. No hope for reprieve ever. For generations. Mm-hmm. You live an entire life of suffering and bondage. Mm-hmm. And so do the next 4 generations of your grandchildren.
Mm. And you know it's coming for them, which has got to be...
And then
also
they know
awful.
It's coming for them. And then they, and then they, and then mm-hmm. they. Never ending.
Mm-hmm.
And they just, like, survived it. And then they freed themselves.
Mm-hmm.
They got fed up, and then they freed themselves. And then they've just been fighting ever since. And so I guess here I am.
So what's your, yeah, so what's your job?
To use the tools that I have at my disposal to keep this world... from going backwards.
Okay.
That's my job, I suppose.
And are you doing it?
Time will tell.
If you're just tuning in, my guest today is Jackie Venson, singer, songwriter from Austin, Texas, guitar virtuoso. And this is our conversation backstage at Live Oak Music Festival. So before we jump back in, let's listen to a little more of Jackie Venson. This is her song, Cover My Eyes. Right here on Central Coast Public Radio, KCBX.
Fire all your weapons. Wave your colored flags. Cursed to see the future. Because I've seen the past. Oh Lord, cover my eyes. Cover my eyes. Cover my eyes, I don't want to see. Violence, it protects us. They say it keeps us free. But as we sow...
Say again, having watched you on stage and watching the audience respond to you and your gifts and your talent, you're moving people.
Well, I'm just trying to remind people that, like, America's greatest strength is its diversity. We've created a culture that the rest of the world is absolutely obsessed with in some way or another. Maybe they don't watch our movies, but they listen to our music. Maybe they don't listen to our music, but they eat our food. You know, there's this place in Germany called Longhorn's Burger, and they have a burger on the menu called the Texas Burger. And the reason why it's called the Texas Burger is because it has guacamole on it.
Oh, that's
impressive.
Funny.
Impressive.
That is funny.
But they knew that, like, Texans like Tex-Mex. Impressive.
Everyone
it's like in some way or the other, like, everyone is completely obsessed with our culture. And it's not because we are better. It's not because we're superior to them. You know why it is? It's because we're the great melting pot. And every single country on this planet sees themselves in us.
Mm-hmm. in a place for themselves.
Yes. They see themselves in us. They hear a rap song with a cumbia beat. And the Colombian dude is like, yeah. they see a black exploitation film, but they're doing kung fu.
Yeah.
Now the Chinese people are like, yeah. Like, you know what I mean? Everybody, like, they see us do like Nacho Libre. The Mexicans are like, hell yeah. I mean, it was really corny, but we appreciate
we'll
you guys.
Take it.
We love that you saw us. You know, they see us going crazy over tacos and celebrating Cinco de Mayo. We don't even know what we're celebrating. They don't care. You know what I mean? The only time we speak Spanish every year is Cinco de Mayo. You know what I mean? Like, like every single country everywhere sees themselves in us because they are us. We're the melting pot of them, you know? And that's why they love us.
Yeah.
They hate us, but they love us.
Because there's a little envy in there.
Yeah, they can't look away. And you know what? The worst of us is also a reflection of them.
Mm.
You know? They were doing fascism and slavery way before we were doing it.
Yeah.
We are them. You know what I mean?
So when you're playing the guitar too, I mean, there's not a lot of women who are jamming their electric guitar and playing the way you do.
There's a few, but not as many as it's men. Not even close.
Not as many as men.
Not say, even close.
Because I wasn't going to throw, like,
no, there's
her
a few.
Is someone.
Oh, no. Joanna Connor, yes. Samantha Fish.
Yes.
There's a
we
lot.
We don't want to block anyone out.
Yeah, Allie Venable. There's a lot. But, like,
but
not even. It's like one. It's like 2 in 10.
Yes.
For every 10 men,
mm-hmm.
there's 2 women.
2 of you.
Yeah.
All right. So what is that like for you to step into the counter role of a woman musician?
Well, women have always held a pretty strong line in music overall.
Okay.
So, like, maybe, like, there's not a lot of women guitar players,
mm-hmm.
but women have, for exactly as long as men have been famous and successful in music, for the exact amount of time it's been women.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you point to Elvis, okay, I'm going to point to Sister Rosetta Tharpe.
Mm-hmm.
You point to Chuck Berry, okay, or Robert Johnson, I'm going to point to Memphis Minnie. You point to Willie Nelson, I'm going to point to Dolly Parton. For every single, like, in music overall, it's just that they don't all play the guitar, or all do this, or all do that. They're spread out throughout all the different skill levels. Chaka Khan plays, like, bass, drums, and she's, like, one of the best singers that's ever lived.
Did not know about the musical part of it.
Yeah, like, in music,
mm-hmm.
women are everywhere.
Yeah.
And have always been. Songwriters?
Mm-hmm.
Carole King has written so many songs for so many
yes.
people. It's crazy. Like, women have always been there. Kind of like Hidden Figures. Women have always been in science, too.
Mm-hmm.
Really, always. Mm-hmm. They're just not encouraged to, and they're not celebrated.
But you don't feel like a hidden figure.
I do.
You do?
I do, yeah.
Yeah, okay.
But I think it's for the best. I think I've been having a really hard time imagining the future, like, the rest of my life.
Mm.
And I don't know if I want to be famous.
Mm.
I don't think I want to be famous.
Like, do you think there's a stopping point that's comfortable for you?
I think I'm coming close to it.
Really?
Yeah. I think I just, like, I want to play.
Mm-hmm.
I want to play shows.
Mm-hmm.
But then, like, I'll just play the shows.
Because what happens if you go past that?
It doesn't seem good. Like, give me any person who, like, is like, I love being famous. Give me any person.
I do a lot of these interviews.
Give me any person who's like, you know what? I'm really famous and I love it. Give me a single person. They all are just like, oh, well, you know, it happened. It's like, okay.
And here I am.
Like, and I feel like there are times where you can just be like, you know what? No.
And do you feel like you can be satisfied at that space? Do you feel like...
I already feel satisfied.
But do you feel like the business is going to try to keep sweeping you forward, or do you feel like you have control of how far
this takes you? I can say no to anything.
Yeah.
I'll say no to anything. Mm. You know, if I think it's going to be weird vibes that are going to launch me into a weird crowd or a weird world,
mm-hmm.
I'm just going to say no to it. Like, if, like, some, like, let's just, like, say this famous person is named, you know, Kevin.
Okay.
So, it's an anonymous person. But, like, this famous person has a crowd that, like, is real weird and obsessive. This person offers me an opening slot. I don't want that crowd to know who I am.
You don't want to be exposed to that.
Yeah, like, I don't want them to know I exist.
Mm.
So I'm going to say no to that gig. and then that door never gets opened. Mm-hmm. It's really that simple. Like,
it's almost like you're protecting yourself from something that'll steal your soul.
Steal things that I don't even understand. Yeah. Like, these people never come out the same. Have you seen the people that have been mutilating their own faces?
Yeah. Yeah.
They don't ever come out the same. And it sounds like the scariest thing ever to, like, lose your life, but your body's not dead.
Mm.
What, walking around in the same body, but it's not the same life?
Mm.
What? No, I spent 18 years in the same house. No.
Well, and that's what I was wondering, does it make it unique because you are still connected to your mom's on the road, your sister, you're still in Austin. Like, you have a full bodied experience of who you are.
Yeah. And I don't want to leave
it. Part of it.
The music is, it's how I support myself. I need to make money. I have to have a job, but the music is also something that I've built up a skill level for 25 years or 27 years now. The music is just all I've ever known. And then I turned it into a trade, but then it's a trade. It's a particular trade that happens to come with this weird little side effect. You know, like, I'm not a doctor, like my mom, like, people don't know my mom, my name, unless they're her patient. That's it. Like, I think the perfect example of, like, a pretty cool career would be like Norah Jones's career.
Hmm.
Like, everybody knows who Norah Jones is, but absolutely, like, nobody knows who she looks like. Like, do you know what she looks like? Can you even, like, imagine what she looks like right now, the way that you can imagine what Denzel Washington looks like?
Different
kind of fame. Like, you don't really know. If she was wearing a hat and sunglasses, you'd never know. Beyonce could never do that.
No.
A hat and sunglasses.
Taylor Swift can't do that.
Could never do that. Do you see what I'm saying? And I'm not saying that, like, I could be that famous, but I'm also not entirely sure that I couldn't be.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't want to play with fire like that.
Mm-hmm. Well, you keep getting indications from the accolades you're getting that that's the direction you could be going.
I could go in that. I don't even want to be as big as John Mayer, dude.
Yeah.
Ugh.
Yeah.
He's like, those people are under a... They can't mess up. They can't be humans. They can't mess up.
Mm-mm.
They get... Oh, man.
When you're not doing music, then, what fills you?
Oh, I'm just at home with my dogs. I really like to watch movies. Oh, my God. I want to, like, it's my life's mission to try and watch, like, most of the movies that humans have made.
Really?
I'll never come close. I'll never even get there. We've made billions of movies, but, like, because this is America. You know how many movies all the other countries have made?
Oh, if you're going to try to do all of them?
Oh, I want to at least see all the classics. Okay, I watched Godfather. Mm-hmm. I want to see it as an adult, as a thinking adult, an experienced adult.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I watched The Godfather. I watched every Star Wars thing. Everything.
That's a commitment. And the Lego movies. Versions?
Yep.
Okay. I watched that's commitment.
Are you talking about Clone Wars?
Yes.
Yep. I watched the whole thing.
Okay.
All 7 seasons. I started with that. I did it in timeline order. Didn't watch Rogue One until, like, after Clone Wars, because Clone Wars predates. And now you know what I'm halfway through right now?
We can't wait to hear.
Star Trek.
Really?
Star Trek is changing my life.
So those are your classics.
Star Trek is changing my life right now. Star Trek has changed my perspective on my career. Star Trek has made my big picture even bigger, and it was already big.
But tell me why.
This career that I'm in right now, where I'm, like, playing on the thing,
mm-hmm.
it's cool, and I'm spreading good vibes, and mm-hmm. people like the music. But in order to really make real change in the larger world, I have to do what's within my control, which is my local community.
Okay.
So I opened up this practice space called Found Sound in Austin, and it has, like, a big room in the back.
Mm-hmm.
And I want to go, and I want to, like, help people. I don't think I'm really helping people out here. I know that, like, people like the show.
Mm-hmm. They leave feeling better about their life.
And that's neat. But, mm-hmm. like, a lot of bands can do that for people. Like, I don't have to be the band that does that.
No.
So
what's in Found Space, and how are you helping people?
I'm giving them a place to practice that's really nice and very mm-hmm. comfortable. I'm also, like, you know, sometimes I run the lobby and they ask me questions about, like, how to get better gigs into bigger venues. And some of them are like, I don't know how to get gigs. And I'm like, you need to do a video. And then we have a big room at the back and they buy a video package and I can, and the video packages are not very expensive, you know? And also we've been having open jams, and I've only been open for 8 months, and I can't do anything while I'm also here. And in order to change the world, you have to change like your little corner of it, because then it ripple effects, you know, like you show people what a cool community music diverse space looks like. And then they are like, wow, well, maybe I can duplicate this in my neighborhood. It's a way bigger impact than just going around and playing shows, I think.
The shows are fab.
They are,
understand that too, because
I can put it on the internet. The shows are on the internet. You know, you can watch them there too.
When I started, as I told you at the beginning, I started this show was to give away everything I knew, because I felt that I was responsible for more people than just those who could pay me.
Yeah, exactly.
And then going through having done radio for so long, there's always that, should I expand the podcast? Should I be social media? Should I be trying to push the show so I help more people? And I've made conscious decisions not to, because I do what I can here. And if I allow myself to start thinking that I'm responsible for more people,
then your impact becomes, you spread yourself then.
And it becomes overwhelming. And and then my ability to walk my talk becomes diminished.
Because you get burnt out.
Yes. And then I start to, like you mentioned, I start to becoming the robot of this story.
Yes.
And not living this life that I'm sharing with other people that's meaningful. Like being a grandma. I take, that has to be the most important thing. Otherwise, my story has no meaning.
Yeah, it has no, like, the songs don't sound good. I can't write, you know, the performance doesn't feel as genuine.
If you're not living the story.
Yeah, and, like, I can't live any story if I'm in a different collection of cities every weekend. I just can't. Mm-hmm. Like, it doesn't make sense. Especially when I have really awesome videos on the internet. Really awesome videos. Like, they're sick. I got this one video, it cost me $80,000. I have this collection of videos that cost me $80,000 because I wanted it to be cinematic Sony Red cameras.
Because you love movies.
Because I love movies.
What's this series of videos so people can look for them?
Ghost in the Machine, live on set.
Okay.
There's like 7 of them up there, or 6 of them maybe. And God, they look sick.
That's so great.
It was a lot of money, and it took me a year to pay off that debt, but it was worth every penny. And like, they're really good. They're really good. And if you got good speakers, good headphones, they sound really good too. And
so you're creating a legacy that'll live on beyond you.
And also the same way that it helps people, those videos help people, and they help more people without me getting burned out. Mm-hmm. Like you said, with the recording, it's just work smarter, not harder with this kind of thing.
Yeah.
You know, and then go home and make some real impact.
Yeah. I hear that, though. I get that.
Yeah.
Did you ever read the book Man's Search for Meaning by Viktor Frankl?
Nope.
You might like it.
I'll check it out.
Yeah.
Man's Search for Meaning.
Man's Search for Meaning. Jackie Vinson, this was phenomenal conversation. Thank you. I really appreciate your willingness to just be open and share what's really going on in your life. That's just refreshing, and you can see it the way people respond to you on stage. So I appreciate that.
No problem. It's been really great.
You've been listening to A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist. I'm Elizabeth Barrett. My guest today has been Jackie Vinson. As always, thank you for tuning in. Thank you for listening and supporting Central Coast Public Radio, KCBX.
Do you hear that, baby? That's the sound of time rolling on. Say, do you hear that, baby? That's the sound of time rolling on. You wake up in the morning, before you know it, the EM's already gone. Are you sure you hear that, baby? Cause I hear it every day. You don't act like you hear that, baby. Cause for me, I can't get away. The more you choose to promise you'll reach your dying day. Each moment could be your last. Some people drink, some people smoke, all to run away from this fact. To run away from this fact, yeah. Time keeps a rolling on.